Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and ahead of spring gardening, we're talking about osteoarthritis in the hands and wrists. Our two expert physical therapists are back with us once again. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin to be on the radio, I guess, although I'd rather be outside.
Jill, by the way, is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Hi there. Hi. Jill.
Hi. Yes, Lori's right. It's a beautiful day to be outside today.
Well, I tell you what, we will get right to it because we've got a lot to talk about here. And as you listen in to our two experts, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you need some advice on relieving hand or finger pain. Maybe you're someone who has had hand osteoarthritis. I hope you'll join in. The number to call 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Maybe one of you could describe hand osteoarthritis and what it looks like. Jill, let's go to you first. What does it look like?
Well, unfortunately, we can get osteoarthritis in our hand. And the most common place to get it is in what we call the carpal metacarpal joint of the thumb. And interestingly, the thumb gives us approximately 70% of our hand function. I like to say it's what separates us from the animals. So it does a lot for our hand. So there is a joint that is, it's a saddle joint that is very prone to arthritis, particularly in women, at that joint at the base of the thumb, and we call it basilar arthritis. So we see it there, even though this is a non-weight-bearing joint. We traditionally think of people getting osteoarthritis or wear and tear arthritis in joints that are weight-bearing. And here's a case where we can see osteoarthritis in a non-weight-bearing joint.
And it's relatively common. I was looking at some figures and mentioned that half of women by the time they're 85 have it, and maybe a quarter of the men.
Correct. It's much more prevalent in women than it is in men. Probably has to do with the underlying hypermobility or excessive movement that women have in their upper extremities in particular. And this joint is a very unique joint. It's a saddle joint, so it has to allow a ton of dexterity.
Yeah.
So that's probably why it's a little bit more at risk for osteoarthritis. The interesting thing was with regards to the paper that Lori and I selected today, it's a really nice current study that had reviewed the literature extensively and actually came to consensus regarding recommendations using a panel that not only had physicians and physical therapists and occupational therapists in it, it actually had patients on the panel as well. Wow. And one of the things I found really interesting was the things that may be recommended for lower extremity osteoarthritis may not necessarily be as effective in somebody who has osteoarthritis, for example, in their hand. So we can't just make this blanket statement that, oh, that topical medication or, oh, that anti-inflammatory medication is going to be helpful for your arthritis, because there are some things that are very joint specific.
Hmm. And is it very similar with the wrist, or?
It's probably similar with the wrist. We don't have quite as much information on the wrist. And typically what we see at the wrist is wear and tear of something called our triangular fibrocartilaginous complex, more commonly known as TFCC, for the reason I just mentioned. Who wants to say that all the time? But it's that manifests a little bit more similar to the meniscus in the knee, where the outside of it or the perimeter of it has some fairly good blood supply, but then the inside does not. It's comprised of a lot of different ligaments, and a lot of people will get some wear and tear changes at their wrist as well. And yesterday was such a beautiful day. I went out for a bike ride, but I did notice a lot of my neighbors were doing some gardening and things like that. And so this time of year, people are using their wrist and hands with gardening tools and things like that a lot more. So they may be prone to exacerbate some underlying pathology.
And it's, boy, I tell you what, it's a problem if you... I was at the doctor's office on Friday of this past week, and it so happened one of the people I was working with had injured her thumb, and she was trying to work. She says, "Man, I can't believe how important that thumb is when it's not working properly."
It's very important. It's a very integral part of our instrumental activities of daily living, like dressing, grooming, things like that. And it is, you are significantly impaired when you do experience a loss of mobility in your thumb.
What did the paper recommend then as far as generally, at least as far as exercise, Lori?
Well, the number one recommended intervention for any arthritis, whether it was the thumb, the hip, or the knee, was exercise. And exercise is the primary intervention provided by physical therapists. So exercise would be the key. So there are a variety of exercises that can be done to maintain the mobility of the thumb, as well as the strength in the surrounding muscles of the wrist and hand. In addition, they also recommend some hand orthoses for the thumb. There are specific orthoses or splints that you can wear for the thumb. So just like you might wear a knee brace if your knee is bothering you, or you might use a cane if your hip is bothering you, there are specific orthoses that are used for the hand. So frankly, those are really the recommended interventions at the thumb. In addition, though, back to the gardening question, there are tools that are ergonomic, that are less stressful on the carpometacarpal joint, the one that is most likely to be affected by osteoarthritis. So, and it's important to distinguish that we are talking about osteoarthritis and not rheumatoid arthritis. So people who have rheumatoid arthritis, which is a systemic disease, not a isolated joint-specific disease, they also are significantly affected in the hand, not just the thumb joint, but the joints of several of the other digits. And so The interventions we're talking about here that are specific to osteoarthritis do not necessarily apply in rheumatoid arthritis.
Interesting. Well, we have callers online with questions. Mark in New Berlin, will go to you first. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking the call. I've got problems with my left hand, and it just started recently. And it's in my thumb and in the longest finger, whatever you call it, in the joints, and it's not continuous. Usually one ibuprofen will take care of it, but I really don't want to be taking ibuprofen for the rest of my life. I'm not sure what – I haven't had it diagnosed. Nobody has told me the Latin name for it. I just call it my hand hurts. And
yeah.
I was wondering, is that something I need to get diagnosed to determine what's the best course of action, or is there something I can do for myself to tell me what it is?
And you said it just started?
I would say within the last month is the first time I've really noticed it.
And have you done anything different in the last month? I assume, Mark, that you're right-handed, and so this would be your non-dominant hand. Is that correct?
Correct, exactly. But no, I do exercise, mainly hiking. In the summer, I'll do biking. But nothing that I can think of that I would have done. I was going to go to the Y again this morning, but I decided to stay here and wait for the show.
So it's your thumb and your middle finger, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
And what are your symptoms? Is it pain? Is it numbness? Is it burning?
It's a dull pain. It's okay. A dull pain. And I would say it's focusing, like you said, to that joint that's closest to the hand.
But when you say closest to the hand, closest to the wrist or closest?
Yes. Okay. The joint closest.
Not the knuckle. Big,
correct. Okay. Not the knuckle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've got no problem with. I was just thinking, well, I'm getting a little bit older and it's a little arthritis, but then I didn't realize there were two kinds of arthritis.
Right. And well, it's not your dominant hand, which is one of the questions. It's like, why are you having symptoms on that side? Is there any particular activity or time of day where it comes on?
Well, in fact, while I was sitting here, I'm on the computer, and while I was sitting here, the thumb started to hurt a little bit. It's probably been more in the evening than that, but right now it is. So I am prone to gout, and I take medicine for that. I haven't had a case of gout for 10 years.
Okay.
Okay. So it could very well be your carpometacarpal joint, that joint that we talk about at the thumb that's so very important, Mark. It could just be that, you're doing more gripping or changing how even you hold weights at the YMCA, for example, how you squeeze a water bottle, that could have exacerbated it a little bit. It's a little interesting that it's your index finger as well. That's a little out of the ordinary, I would say. Most people don't have problems with their index finger unless you're really trying hard to grip something really big. But it probably wouldn't hurt to see someone just to make sure that we can keep you active. We wouldn't want you to discontinue lifting weights or anything like that. And if we can catch this early, hopefully we could get you on the right path.
Yeah, probably needs a look, physical look.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that comes to mind is it something coming from your neck? Does it have to do with your posture or something like that? Or, so if you're sitting at the computer and your symptoms come on, it could be related to your posture. But typically those symptoms are not pain. They are more, they get a tingling or those kinds of symptoms. So that's why it wasn't clear which direction we were going. So it might make sense to have it looked at and see if it's coming primarily from the joints in your wrist, if it's coming from your elbow, because it can also be referred from there, or from your neck. So there are a number of suspects on that list, and your symptoms are not really pointing to one or the other at this point.
Worth a look, Mark. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. By the way, Jill Nadeau is our on-air producer today, Courtney Everett, our producer, and Trina LaSousa, our engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at physical therapy today. We're zeroing in a bit on arthritis in hands and wrists. Questions for our guests, you can join in. Lori Tyne Brody, by the way, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. A star in Arkdale will give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Great. This is a very helpful program. My question is, once or twice a week, I have like three fingers in my right hand that lock up, and I have to take my left hand to unlock them. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but it's scary. Is that arthritis?
It's possible that it's arthritis, but unlikely. Especially because it's more than one finger. So if you had, for example, a trigger finger, for example, then it might feel like it locks when you get into a specific position, but that would be one joint, one finger. So the fact that you're getting all three or several fingers at the same time suggests that it is probably not orthopedic in nature. Are you noticing any changes in the palm of your hand at all?
No.
And the skin or anything like that? Okay. And typically what are you doing when that happens?
Just household things, you know, nothing clean, you know, just picking up something or whatever. It just locks up. And if I move my fingers, they're sore sometimes.
But so does it feel like it's locking or it's cramping?
It's totally locked. I can't move it. It's like paralyzed.
Okay. Well, paralyzed feels different than locking. Locking for us as physical therapists, locking feels mechanical, like something is blocking the motion. So when you say it's paralyzed, you can still feel it, but you can't actively move it.
Right.
Is that correct? And then you take your other hands and you open it and open up your hand. And then what happens then? Can you move it?
Yes, that's fine. Then it goes back to normal and nothing happened.
Okay.
What position when they kind of lock or cramp up, what position do your fingers end up in? And can you tell me which fingers they are? Are they like your middle finger, ring finger, pinky?
It's my middle fingers. It's hard to tell because when it locks up, I don't know exactly which ones, but I think it's like definitely the two middle fingers.
Does this sound more like cramping to you, Lori, than a mechanical?
It does. It sounds vascular or neurovascular to me.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're both thinking that this seems like a neurovascular issue, which means it could be coming. Here we are again. There are several suspects. It could be coming from the carpal tunnel, where you're getting swelling and pressure in the carpal tunnel for the nerves that come in and feed the nerves in the vascular supply that come in and feed the middle fingers in your hand. It could be a thoracic outlet kind of entrapment. It could be coming from your neck. So is this a recent phenomenon?
No, it's like a year at least it's been going on.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's time to go see somebody then. If this is not resolved on its own in 12 months, it is clearly not going to resolve. So I would get to the root of this. And there may be some simple things that you can do to prevent this from happening that you're not aware of. So you need somebody to sort out the origin of this problem and then give you some strategies to either prevent it or to deal with it when it happens.
And would she see, who would Star see?
Well,
a hand therapist?
She can start with a primary care physician, or the ideal person to see for this would be a certified hand therapist. And a certified hand therapist can be either an occupational therapist or a physical therapist. That is one kind of domain that we share with our OT colleagues. And so in some places, most of the hand evaluations, things like that, are handled by occupational therapists who are CAHTs, and in other places they're PTs. So I would look and see if a facility close to you had somebody who was a certified hand therapist, and that would be an ideal place to start.
There you go, Star. Thank you so much for calling. David in South Milwaukee, we'll go to you. David, thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning, folks. You know, I just got to say, listening to the ailments and ages of many of your callers over the years reminds me of a birthday card I bought my brother a couple years back, the front of which reads, "Growing old is a lot like frying bacon in a nude," and shows a politically correct side view characterization of an older fellow doing just that. And then the opening, it says, "You know it's going to hurt, you just don't know where."
Oh, that's a good one, David.
No, thanks for
the
laugh.
You know, Stephanie, I can relate. I'm hoping you folks can help me with the condition my GP very technically wrote down as crooked back, but I think is more accurately called kyphosis, in that my upper back is overly rounded and my lower back appears quite indented. And I was not quite aware this was occurring, actually, until I started getting some serious abdominal pain upon eating. And I actually had to lay down a couple times in the midst of meals in order to continue. And then I had a battery of tests last year, revealed no chronic illnesses or infections, but I found two bulging discs at L4 and L5, an area in which I have some regular spot pain. But the really scary symptom, folks, is for me is what I noticed upon a frontal view, my rib cage has collapsed into my abdomen, with my sternum about 1 or 2 inches to the right of center in a very deep horizontal groove where the ribcage meets the abdomen.
Mm.
And sure enough, when I do a stand-up, hands stretched to the sky, Superman pose, and maintain it, the abdominal discomfort all but goes away.
Yeah.
It's on my agenda as soon as I get the results of my yearly MRI in late June, to which I'm tagging a scan of my upper spine as I've got another one of those spot pains at the base of my skull and, again, just to the right of my spine.
So
it makes sense that you had abdominal pain with eating when, if you have this kyphotic curve and you're kind of curved forward and your sternum is kind of pushing into your abdominal cavity, it's basically a mechanical barrier. So unfortunately, all that makes sense. And you're right, opening up or trying to stretch in that Superman position would open that space up for you, David. So that would be a helpful strategy.
Yeah. Anything else that he can do at this point? I guess he needs to see his physician.
I don't know that he necessarily needs to see his physician. I think we have a pretty clear idea what's going on. I think he needs to get started in physical therapy to deal with his kyphotic posture. We need to know if it's fixed. That is it changeable at this point, or is that kyphosis fixed? Or is it dynamic, and can we change it at this point in time? We don't want it to progress to where he's completely bent over for the rest of his life. He's got a lot of years to live. So, it makes sense. He's got a disc herniation if he's forward bent all the time. He needs to get in and get started on some things to correct that posture.
And sooner than later, probably.
Yes, sir. I wouldn't wait till June.
Right. Yeah. This will be a lifestyle change. These will be exercises that will want to weave and bob throughout your lifestyle and just kind of incorporate into your daily habits. And I'm guessing, Lori, one of the places that might be good for him to start exercising is the pool. He might be able to get in some really nice, prolonged stretching, comfortable positions in the pool.
Absolutely. For those folks, I like to have them doing things on their back.
So there you go, David. You're in South Milwaukee. You've got pools nearby, but I probably best to first get in to see a therapist and have it taken care of, it won't be taken care of immediately from the sound of it, but you'll have some exercises and things you can do to hopefully get yourself in the right direction. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We will turn to Robert in Decorah, Iowa next. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning, Larry. My issue is with my left hand. I am left-handed, and it's with the pinky finger. So that, and this issue apparently happens in the morning only. I have a hard time having the tip of the finger meet against the palm. Now it's getting better because I've been listening to you, I've been exercising this and moving it up and down. But it comes every morning, and there are issues with some of the other finger joints, but this is the one that really is bothering me.
So once you get it moving a little bit, Robert, is it better throughout the day?
Robert, are you there? Oh, we may have lost him. Not hearing him.
Well, if we can, I guess we can talk a little bit about this. So it sounds like if he's got some morning stiffness, if that's the only joint, and as he moves it, it gets better throughout the day, he may have some arthritic changes in that pinky area. We use the pinky side of our hand a lot for power gripping. He's left-handed, so I guess one of the questions I would probably have asked him is, did he do a lot of something in his life where he had to grip things hard, Lori, or something along those lines?
Yeah, I also wonder about his position when he's sleeping.
Right.
If there's something about his position, almost a nerve-related issue around his the hook of the handmate or the PC form. and that's affecting his little finger function until he gets up and gets moving as well. So it's unusual to have arthritis in right. your pinky finger in the absence of an injury, even in your dominant hand.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Well, or maybe something in his cubital tunnel along his ulnar nerve. He could get some entrapment
right.
there.
Right.
And Lori, just remember, we've both been to Decorah, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
We were there on our bikes. We went to the Whippy Dip.
Well, I was, as Margaret was talking, I was thinking about my own pinky on my left. I had a little tumor removed from the bone, inside the bone of my pinky finger a long time ago, and I still can't. I can't quite get it to touch the palm of my hand, but it still works, and it doesn't hurt much, so...
Does it affect your golf game, Larry?
Well, I can use it as an excuse.
Does it change your handicap?
It is. I have to play around with Courtney Everett, one of our producers, and I'm going to use that as an excuse if she beats me. There you go. Well, enough about my golf game. What about you? You have a question about your wrist or fingers, other kinds of questions? I hope you'll join in. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mark in Summers, we'll go to you now. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, both of my wrists have been bothering me, hurting at times, depending on what I'm doing during the day. For about 10 years, they were diagnosed with arthritis by my hand specialist doctor up at Brainerd in Milwaukee. And he said he cannot do really anything other than, you know, fuse this or that together, but which would reduce my range of motion. So I'm looking for a little bit of, I heard the exercise portion and the splints. What kind of exercises are we talking about? The left wrist was had an MRI to it, and the right wrist had a regular x-ray, and that's how the doctor diagnosed the arthritis.
And you said you've had this for about 10 years. So is there something you do as a laborer or something like that that had probably accelerated this or caused you to have such excessive wrist arthritis, Mark?
No, it's nothing I've been doing in the past. Well, I shouldn't say that. In my teenage and young adult years, I pushed a lawnmower quite a bit for the park system here, as well as UW system. And I worked a lot with grocery carts, banging them around for a long time. Plus, I've been an on and off weightlifter since I was 16.
Mm. Yeah. So you've had this for 10 years. Has it gotten worse?
No, actually, it stayed somewhat the same. It's painful after I get done working, so sometimes I'll take some ibuprofen before I do a physical job. Sometimes I'm very conscious of not sleeping in a position where I'm curling my hands. I'm flattening them before I go to sleep. But still, you know, as you know, things do change during the night, and I can wake right. up with some god-awful pain.
Yeah.
Well, there are splints you can use at night. If you're going to be doing something that's heavy labor or heavy work and load on your wrist, you might just want to have some wrist splints that you wear just for that activity to decrease the load across your wrist. Realize always that if you decrease the load across one joint, you will be placing the load on something else. Something else has to pick up the slack. Which is why in terms of exercise, we don't just exercise at the wrist, but we exercise above and below. And for in the case of the wrist, it would be exercising all the way up through the shoulder and the shoulder girdle, as well as things like your grip strength.
There's also something out there, and again, I would see a physical therapist for this, because you've had this for 10 years and it's plateaued, which is great, but we don't want it to get worse. So I think some of the suggestions Lori made with the wrist splint and things like that are great, and giving you like a proper exercise routine would be great. The other thing that sometimes I'll put people into something called a wrist widget. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, but it's a very low profile wrist splint. That gives you some support, but it doesn't immobilize your wrist quite as much as a true wrist splint. So for some people, that works really well. Speaking from personal experience, I sleep in a wrist splint occasionally because I have a yucky wrist as well. And I do think it's a game changer for me personally.
Here you go. Thank you, Mark. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Steve emailed to ask if rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory condition. Can diet be used to reduce inflammation throughout the body? And can you speak more a bit about the differences between osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah, absolutely. So osteoarthritis is a single joint disease. And so typically it affects one joint. Now, because some people were granted sort of crappy connective tissue by their parents and their lineage, they may have osteoarthritis in more than one joint. Osteoarthritis does affect the entire joint, not just the articular cartilage, but it affects the bones and the joint as well. So it is an isolated joint disease. Rheumatoid arthritis, on the other hand, is a systemic disease. It occurs throughout the entire system of your body. It affects all joints throughout your body. Now, some tend to have worse symptoms than others. In particular, people with rheumatoid arthritis, you notice their hands, they get this, we call it ulnar drift in their fingers, and they get really misshapen fingers. So that's one of the obvious differences. Patients with rheumatoid arthritis are treated with systemic medications like methotrexate and other types of systemic interventions, whereas osteoarthritis is treated with joint-specific interventions. You may get an injection or something like that in a single joint. So that's the basic difference between those two. And then he asked about
diet.
Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to take that, Jill? You want me? No. Okay.
Go ahead.
So yes, there are, if you Google anti-inflammatory diets, you're going to get a lot of stuff. It's not really regulated. There's a lot of hype out there about, oh, you must do this and, oh, you must do that. What we do know is that antioxidants, just like vitamin C, leafy green vegetables, et cetera, have an impact on your connective tissue and can be helpful in the management of free radicals that are related to inflammation throughout the body. So eating a healthy, balanced diet, the DASH diet is the recommended diet that's very heavy in fruits and vegetables and fats that are healthy fats as compared to unhealthy fats. And there is some suggestion that following a healthier diet, i.e. the DASH diet, will help with systemic inflammation.
Thanks again for that email. Appreciate it very much, Steve. And Carol from Rice Lake emailed to talk about, I'll probably butcher this name, Dequervain synovitis.
Yep.
Dequervain synovitis. Yeah. You test it with the Finkelstein test. Really long words for something. It is a tendonitis or tendinopathy of tendons that run along your thumb. So it is your abductor pollicis longus and your extensor pollicis brevis, if you really want to get fancy. But they run in a sheath that's on the outer side of your thumb. And the population we see it in is somebody who has to grip an item and then turn their wrist towards their pinky side. And the people who come to mind for me are hairdressers when they're cutting hair. And they have to kind of hold the scissors at an angle and then turn their wrist. What it does is it kind of irritates the tendon on that side when you have to use your thumb to grip something and then kind of stretch it. So it's called Descuervain's tenosynovitis. We test it with something called the Finkelstein test, which is a little test you do to kind of tension the tendons. Treatment is, again, typically like we do with any itis or inflammatory process. If there's inflammation there, we want to kind of immobilize it. So thumb spicas work really well in this case. They may have to take some anti-inflammatories over the counter, something like that. And then changing how they use their hand or changing how they're doing whatever activity it was that got them that way in the first place is what's going to be important. And, you know, the population that we see it in a lot are people who do a lot of overuse that have to put their hands in very awkward positions while holding something.
Plumbers, electricians.
Yeah.
And in her case, she used she had surgery to, and I guess, corrected it.
So some people will get, if they lay down a lot of scar tissue around the tendinous sheath, they'll get a little debridement where they go in and they kind of clean up that scar tissue. And you're right. That's certainly something that's an option. Typically, we try to exhaust conservative therapy first.
Sure.
But that would definitely be something worth considering. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Jill in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was in a car accident on December 28th. I had side whiplash, and that's resolved with my physical therapist after 8 weeks, the neck, the back, the shoulder type of thing. But now I have hip bursitis, and I'm just wondering, I was recommended to take meloxicam, an anti-inflammatory, and I'm just wondering, will that mask the symptoms, or is it okay to take?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So typically medications that are, you know, over the counter or a low dose anti-inflammatory are not enough to mask symptoms where you will hurt yourself. So I wouldn't worry about that. Is this a bursitis on the outside of your hip, a trochanteric bursitis?
Yes.
So are you getting some physical therapy for that bursitis?
Well, not yet. I just had an x-ray and saw an orthopedic because my physical therapist finished with the rest of my body, you know, the other part. So
right.
They were giving us some time, and I thought, well, okay, maybe this would help. It's 15 milligrams, one a day. So
I would also get into physical therapy because you want to deal with the underlying cause that's perpetuating that trochanteric bursitis. And these can tend to linger if they're not treated. So I would get in with the PT early on and get some exercises for your hip muscles.
And it sounds like you do a good job because the rest of your body, you must have followed the therapist's suggestions and done the work. So you're a good candidate to get the rest of this taken care of as well. Thank you so much for calling, Jill. Appreciate it. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody, our physical therapists, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues, we've zeroed in on osteoarthritis in the hands and wrists, and we've taken some other questions as well. I hope you'll join in with yours. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, physical therapists at UW, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. And let's take another call. Janice in Menominee, we'll go to you now. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I get shooting pains in one of my fingers. They don't last long. It's more like a zinger down my ring finger in my right hand. And also, lately I've been waking up in the middle of the night and my whole arm and hand, I'm getting pain, and it's like a tingly, and you know, I have to like shake, I can shake it out and it gets better.
Yeah, Janice, this sounds like it's probably coming from your neck or a position that you're sleeping in at night with your neck in a crooked position or something like that. Have you seen a physical therapist or seen anybody for this?
No, I'm not. It just started.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think it's probably a good thing to get in and see someone. We want to make sure that we can figure out the source of symptoms, exactly what this is, and then perhaps provide you with some correct postures or exercise, sleeping positions, recommendations regarding pillows, different things like that, so we can prevent it from progressing. Lori, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, no. It seems like a pretty straightforward situation. Your symptoms are pretty classic for someone who's having primary problems coming from the neck or thoracic outlet.
All right. There you go, Janice. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Jane in Bessemer, Michigan, your turn. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I noticed that I have lumps in my right hand, solid lumps, like, and it started a few years ago, and my fingers are starting to tighten up and lock, and at night, my fingers are starting to hurt also.
Yes. It's sounding like Dupuytren's contraction. So this is something that needs to be seen by a certified hand therapist, your physician. So some people get this, you know, idiopathic contraction of the connective tissue in their hand, and it ends up with these lumps sort of in the palm of their hand. And ultimately sort of contraction of your fingers into more of a claw-like position. So I would get in and have somebody take a look at this.
Exercises probably recommended to...
There will be some exercises. You know, right now there's not any real treatment for it other than preventing it from getting worse. Although I could be wrong about that. I haven't read up on Dupuytren's lately.
Okay. So, Jane,
so I would
get
in
there.
And get seen. Yeah.
Sooner than later. Thank you for calling. And speaking of bumps, Ed emailed. He has osteo in his fingers. And he wants to know why bumps form on his knuckles. He says it takes weeks to go away and they ache the entire time. Wonders if there's a treatment for that. He adds that he has the bumps and a trigger finger on the middle finger and wonders if they're connected.
So those bumps are called Heberden's nodes and Bouchard's nodes, really fancy terms for changes, arthritic changes that we can palpate at the joint per se. So when our joint space narrows and things become compressed, we actually get a little bit more bony formation on the sides. That's why you can feel those little bumps on the sides of the joints in your fingers as you become arthritic as we age. So they have fancy names, and it's just really, unfortunately, palpable arthritis is really what it is. With regards to the trigger finger, I don't think there's any relation to trigger fingers and Heberden's or Bouchard's nodes. It's very common to have a trigger finger. Usually it's in either the ring finger or the middle finger. Those can be treated with a cortisone injection for a couple times. And if that's not successful, they can be treated surgically. What happens is you get a little wad of scar tissue that slides under. It's called your A1 pulley, a pulley in your finger. And when that wad of scar tissue goes back and forth and kind of gets stuck on that pulley, then it slides under really quick and slides the other way. That's when you get that rapid movement of your finger.
There you go. Thank you very much for that email, Ed. Appreciate it. Tony in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Tony.
Hey, hello. Thank you very much for being here.
Sure.
Quick question. I have a right ankle that has an impingement at about 2 o'clock on it. I have good flexion and extension when I put my skates on and drive off my inside edge of my right foot. At about the 2 o'clock mark on my ankle, I get a lot of pain. If I'm running or jumping, I get a lot of pain there. I am 59 years old, so age is probably an issue.
When you say 2 o'clock, do you explain what that is? Your toes are pointed towards the two, so you're slightly turned out?
No, my toes would be pointed at 12 o'clock, but I am pushing off on a flexed ankle at about the 2 o'clock mark is where I get a lot of pain. And I can get down into a position to slide my ankle back and forth, more of a yoga position. And that is where the pain is. And it's a nice pain.
I think it's a Taylor Dome issue, Lori. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking too. So it sounds to me like you're pretty active if you're skating and things like that. And your ankle joint is a very tight congruent joint. And it's covered with beautiful articular cartilage, as Lori's favorite topic. My second favorite topic is articular cartilage. We love to talk about it. And what can happen over time is you can irritate it. It can become, you can take a little divot out of it. It can become compressed. And it sounds like you're probably impinging that. You should see a physical therapist because these things can be treated. Sometimes you just need to increase ankle mobility. So through joint mobilization or some appropriate stretching, sometimes these things can be taken care of. So as active as you are, if you're skating a bunch at 59, we want to keep you skating. And so I would definitely see a physical therapist for this. Lori, anything else?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Jill's right. For the architects in the audience, the ankle joint itself is a mortise joint. And so you have those two bony prominences that come down, you know, the little bumps on the inside and outside of your ankle. And then the Taylor Dome sits in between there in this mortise. And so there's not a lot of room. It flexes pretty nicely forward and back in flexion extension. But if you imagine trying to rotate something in a mortise, it doesn't rotate very well. So if you're skating and you're rotating in there a lot and shearing on there, boy, your articular cartilage just doesn't like that. So it may be the result of lots of years of skating and pushing off and loading that joint in the same spot over and over again. So like Jill said, you may be able to steal a little bit more motion with some specific joint mobilization techniques. Otherwise, you may be looking at modifying your skating just a little bit.
Or I wonder for an orthotic in the skate. I know people hate to put orthotics in their skates, but I wonder if we somehow posted him a little bit differently in a skate, if that would help as well. That would be another.
Yeah, I thought about that too. It would take somebody looking at him in his skate to make that call.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Sue in Eagle. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm 70 years old. I've been diagnosed with osteoarthritis since I was in my 50s. I have quite a bit of involvement with my hands where both thumbs and actually all my fingers have the swollen, almost fixed knuckles. And so I'm currently being treated with Plaquenil, which has been very helpful, and then meloxicam when things get harder for me, and that seems to be almost weather related, or humidity or dampness that can all cause flare-ups. My question to the physical therapist, and I do the YMCA and do water therapy a couple of times a week, and it has also helped. But I'm trying to retain as much of my grip strength, and I don't know what I should be doing to either maintain or even increase it if I can.
Well, have you seen a hand therapist recently?
I've seen a therapist, not recently, but I've been treated by therapists before, and they were telling me as far as water therapy is the best thing. And then trying to, make connection between thumb and each finger.
Right, back and forth. So one of the things we tell people, particularly with osteoarthritis, is you need to have check-ins with your physical therapist as time goes on, because things change. Your body changes, your joints change, your function changes, your priorities change. So it may be time to revisit that and see what you should be doing now. Jill, you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to mention that from a water therapy perspective and all the exercises Sue was talking about, the taking her thumb and touching all of her different fingers, those are really good for mobility, Sue, to keep the motion. But you're talking about grip, which is more of a strengthening type of exercise. So I think we're talking about two different things here. I love the exercises that you described. That's wonderful. But if you want to increase grip strength, I think, like Lori said, seeing a therapist for something more specific with regards to strengthening is probably a really good strategy.
Yeah, that's where I'd go.
Sue, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today, osteoarthritis in hands and wrists, and certainly we've talked about other things as well with our two guests, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tine Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But you can call in right now if you want. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or just go ahead and email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at getting some advice from our physical therapist, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tine Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions for them. The lines are filled right now. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Tom emailed us earlier in the show, talked about an NPR story about a doctor promoting his new cartilage replacement. He's stripping the DNA out of leaves and replacing the DNA with the DNA growing with the patients. He actually takes the DNA out of leaves, replaces the DNA with the patient's DNA, grows it in a petri dish, and then slides it into the joint. And I don't know if you guys have heard about it. He's written a book about it. And we're just wondering if you had any thoughts or had heard about it.
I have not heard about it at all. So there are a number of biologic interventions under study where they're trying to grow articular cartilage. So this is probably one of the many techniques that are out there. And hopefully at some point we will have a replacement for articular cartilage, which will save a lot of people a lot of pain and agony and joint replacements. I mean, osteoarthritis is a leading cause of disability throughout the United States. It's one of the most expensive things to treat in the United States. So, you know, we think about cancer and heart disease and things like that, but it's estimated to affect 302 million people worldwide, and it is the leading cause of disability among adults. So,
well, this doctor claims it's going to be in regular use within 2 years. It'll be the mainstream within 2 years, is what he's predicting. So
I can't imagine getting that through human trials and FDA approval and all of that would happen in 2 years. That'd be hard. There is one of the things that is done, for example, if somebody has articular cartilage defects, they can do something called autologous chondrocyte implantation, where they actually take some of your native stem cells and they send them to a lab and they multiply them. And then those stem cells are reinduced back into your articular cartilage defect with your native articular cartilage cells being spun out and recreated and produced in a trypsin type fluid. But there's no leaves involved with that. So,
all right.
I'm not sure what he's thinking about, but as Lori said, there's a lot of research on this for good reason.
Let's go to Bob in Oakdale next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you doing? Love your show. Love all your guests, especially these two nice ladies.
Well, what's on your mind today?
I've noticed over the past year, I had used to be able to sleep on my stomach, throw my arms out, have my head hands under my head. And over the past year, I can't even do that. If I lay on my side and raise up on my elbow, my either shoulder, doesn't matter, is in like excruciating pain after like a minute. I did make an appointment with a therapist, but that's the whole month away yet. I was wondering if they could offer something I could do in the meantime to alleviate the pain.
So, Bob, clarify for me, where are you having symptoms when you're on your side?
Shoulder, I think he said.
In both the shoulders. I mean,
both of the shoulders. Okay.
Yeah, right now it's at a point where if I raise it up like a wing and I get to 90 degrees from the body, it starts to hurt.
Okay.
It starts to hurt, or can you move farther? Could you make the angel all the way up in the snow, Bob, or do you stop right at 90 degrees?
I can get it all the way up. It just hurts like a...
Yeah.
Like the son of a gun. And right. can you get your arm behind your back, like if you were going to reach around to scratch your back from the bottom up? Can you do that?
Yeah. Okay. There's a little pain, but not as much.
Okay, good. Good. Well, I'm glad that you're getting in to see somebody. So, what we're screening you here for is a frozen shoulder, and it doesn't seem like you have developed a frozen shoulder, because those are pretty nasty to treat. And if it seemed like you were heading that direction, we would insist that you get in sooner than a month. So in the meantime, doing some gentle movement, like if you put your hands on the kitchen counter, and then just walk yourself back and lean down to see if you can get your arms overhead without actually raising them up yourself. What we want to do is to maintain your range of motion until you get in to see somebody. We don't want you losing motion in your shoulder because it's painful to move them. That's where you will set yourself up for a frozen shoulder. So, you know, lying on your back on the bed or the floor and trying to make those snow angels so that you're not lifting against gravity. For many people, it's the lifting your arms up against gravity that makes it so painful. So if you can do that in a non-gravity position, such as lying on your back, for those who do yoga, a child's pose is a great way to do this. Or, as I said, putting your hands out on the kitchen counter and keeping them there and then just walking yourself back so that your arms go overhead is a good idea. Jill, do you have any other suggestions, your favorite shoulder motion exercises?
I like all of those a lot. I think frequent moving is really good, but not aggressive moving. So as Lori mentioned, you kind of want to stay out of that pain-free range. So you don't want to push. I say you want to push up to, but not through that pain. So go to just where it's a little uncomfortable and come back down. And I would do it frequently throughout the day just to kind of create a nice fluid pump in your shoulders.
Right. But I would also not back away from going all the way overhead.
Right.
Because it's uncomfortable. Because then you will end up with a stiff shoulder. So I think a couple times a day, you've got to make it all the way up overhead, and you have to reach behind your back, like you're going to scratch your back.
The other kind of barometer I use is it an electric stove or a gas stove? So you get up there and it's uncomfortable and you bring your arm back down. Does your pain go away immediately? Like a gas stove, you turn it on, you turn it off. Or is it like an electric stove where you go up overhead and then you bring your arm back down and gosh, it's sore for 3 hours? If it's a gas stove where, it hurts while I stretch, but I bring it back down and my pain goes away, that's really a sign that you can tolerate some of that stretching. If it's more like an electric stove, I would definitely err on the side of caution. I'd still do it, but then I wouldn't overdo it.
Good luck, Bob.
Here's your cooking lesson for the day.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to John in Watertown. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Yes. I've recently been going through some physical therapy at 58 and realizing how much we atrophy different parts of our body when we don't use them and stuff. And also dealing with snoring and wondering if our throat can do that, the muscles or the back of our mouth, things like that. Have they ever done any kind of physical therapy to work with that? I know when people have strokes sometimes and they lose the ability to swallow and they work their way back. Has there any been thought of certain types of snoring issues that could be helped with any kind of physical therapy?
So typically snoring issues are helped with speech therapy. So we often send those people to speech therapy to work on things around their voice. Sometimes they look at the shape of your mouth, and an appliance can help with snoring. In terms of physical therapy, there's not anything in particular that physical therapists do for snoring. We know that snoring is associated with things like obesity, and it kind of goes in a cluster with hypertension and so on. So we don't deal with snoring itself, but in terms of the cluster of therapies, speech therapy tends to work more with snoring than we do.
There you go, John. Thank you for calling. David in Wanakee, we'll move to you now. Hi, David.
I just want to bring up the point that what people think is arthritis may not be arthritis. I had a little finger and the finger next to it that I was unable to bend all the way down. It was quite painful. I saw an occupational therapist at UW, a perfectly wonderful person, who determined this was not arthritis. This was, I had irritated a tendon or two in my left hand. She designed a splint for me on the spot, and I wore that splint several hours a day, and within a month or two, the pain, the mobility went away. Now, this has been a year and a half, and I still have full access. So the point is, it may not be arthritis. Get to an occupational therapist and find out exactly what your problem is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a superlative insight, David. And that is the reason why Jill and I often say, you know, go see somebody, because in our heads, we have a prioritized differential diagnosis list. And it may include arthritis, but it can also be a tendinopathy. It could also be a nerve impingement or irritation at the wrist, at the elbow, at the shoulder, at the neck. So it's not as if we're intentionally sidestepping somebody's issue, but it's for exactly the reason that you just outlined that we say, you know, you really need to see somebody, because if I say it's arthritis and you do what I say and you don't get better, you're going to like, well, what the heck do they know? So usually we're trying to give our best guess based upon the signs and symptoms that people report. But there's a lot of overlap in those Venn diagrams, which is why you need a professional to sort them out.
Yeah, David, thank you.
Well done, David.
Yeah, and those occupational therapists at UW Health, as you talked about, they are almost all certified hand therapists. And you're right, they can make splints and everything right on the fly. And that's a wonderful profession to have that, you know, we work for. And so they're a fantastic group of people. So thanks for sharing that. That's a great story. And that's exactly why we want you to see the right person.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. Nancy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I have excruciating pain in my right thumb. And I'm a right-handed person. When I try to use a can opener of any kind, I also cannot use my thumb to use a pair of pliers, and I have a lot of hobbies involving pliers. So I had heard of a surgery that consists of tissue taken from your forearm and put into your thumb joint to make it stronger. And I'm age 90, and I'm wondering if you think that, first of all, that would be beneficial for me, or would I just be denied simply because of my age?
Oh, boy. I hope not.
Yeah, we don't. It's all about ability. Age has nothing to do with it. It sounds like you're very active. So the surgical technique that you're talking about is for that carpal metacarpal joint that we talked about earlier, where everybody gets their thumb arthritis, their basilar arthritis, and the we call it the anchovy technique because it looks like they take a little anchovy and put it in the joint space. But that's exactly what they do, is they take some part of tendons and strip it down, and they basically make a spacer, if you will, for your carpal metacarpal joint. So there might be other strategies, Nancy, that would be better first options for you than going straight on to surgery. I don't know, Lori, do you want to talk about taking injections?
So typically, unless you're in a serious condition, we try not to jump to surgery first. So going to see a hand therapist to talk about splints and tools. So, you know, you said a pliers. Well, you know, there are ergonomically correct pliers that you may be able to use. Our mother had this surgery, as well as several of her sisters. And I remember buying my mother an electric can opener for Christmas one year for precisely the reasons that you noted there. So the point being that there are strategies to manage and be able to do the things that you want to do without having surgery. If you try all those things, you go see the hand therapist, you get a splint, you get some ergonomic tools, and you say, you know, still not good enough, still can't do what I want to do, then you discuss surgery. But short of that, as Jill said, there are some things we would want to try first to see if we can make your life work for you without having to go to surgery.
Nancy, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Celia in Oshkosh, we're on to you now. Hi, Celia.
Good morning. Afternoon, I guess. I am a gardener. I am going to be 80 this year. I put in a lot of tomato plants. And my left hand, I'm a lefty, my left hand, the last two fingers get numb. And the way I weed is I can't get down because of a bad knee, and I am going to physical therapy. So I put my hand, my arm on my left knee. I'm a right-handed weeder for some reason or other. But the numbness doesn't bother me except that it is numb. It doesn't hurt. But I'm just wondering if there's something to do to improve that. The season is coming. If I rest my left elbow on my desk, I feel a little more numbness. So is it a pinched nerve? What do I do? I have been to the doctor too.
So when you weed with your right hand, are you putting your left, it's like doing the hokey pokey, are you putting your left hand on your left knee?
Yes. And wearing out the jeans.
It could be Guillain. It could be in her Guillain canal, but she also mentioned her elbow.
Her elbow, yeah, yeah.
So are you thinking ulnar nerve?
It could be, yeah, it sounds like it's ulnar nerve. The question is, so here we are again doing that dance. It sounds like ulnar nerve because it's the two digits, little finger, fourth finger. That's ulnar nerve. It could be at your wrist when you're in wrist extension, but you're also feeling it at your elbow. So it could be at your elbow as well. It could be at both places. So seeing a physical therapist and having them sort out the origin of pain, there's a number of tests they can do to see, is this coming from your elbow? Is it coming from your wrist? Could even be coming farther up, but you're not symptomatic there yet. So, particularly in the arm, you have a number of suspects that where nerves can get hung up at various places and they manifest in your hand. So seeing somebody and getting a more definitive diagnosis and doing that in advance of gardening season. And then in the meantime, be aware of the positions and postures that you're in. So instead of putting your hand on your knee, you might want to put your forearm across your knee so that you're not putting that pressure across your wrist, and that could solve some of your problems as well. But get in to see somebody.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you. Wilhelm in Colfax, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I was just calling about the carpal tunnel. I had it when I was in my 20s. I'm 71 now. And it was, I got the injection into my wrist, which was only more painful. And then they suggested the surgery, which this was in the 1970s. Maybe it's advanced, but the surgeon said there was probably a 50-50 chance that it would improve it through surgery. And I thought that's not good enough to risk something. I use my hands every day. So I would just encourage people to try an alternative. I did ginger compresses on it like 3 times a day for a while, and that seemed to clear it up, seemed to help. Occasionally it reoccurs, and I do the same thing. Or acupuncture or acupressure, something other than, I would say surgery would be my last resort.
Yeah, what do you think?
I mean, those are great points, Wilhelm. We agree that for most things, trying exhausting all conservative care is really, really important. The other tricky thing about the carpal tunnel is, you know, you need to make darn sure that that is where the median nerve is entrapped. You don't want to have surgery on your carpal tunnel when the median nerve entrapment is coming somewhere up in your forearm, because then you're having a surgery that's completely unnecessary and ineffective. So you do want to try multiple conservative measures. You want to make sure that we know the precise location of the entrapment and that we're identifying that and addressing that issue. And trying to make sure that the whole limb, in this case, your upper extremity, is working together. And if we need to kind of steal motion from another area, that we do that. So I concur with you, Wilhelm. I would definitely try exhausting everything else first, kind of like we talked about with Nancy and her thumb, mm-hmm. before you go right. on surgery.
Exactly. Many people, even in the presence of known pathology, whether it's at the shoulder or the spine or the knee, they do remarkably well with conservative management. So we always encourage people to start there. So thank you for emphasizing that point for us so nicely.
And on that note, we are about out of time. Jill, Lori, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your visit next month. Thanks
awesome.
A lot.
Awesome.
Sounds great.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW-Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Just wanted to mention our book club is this week. We're reading, hope you've been reading, Send For Me by Lauren Fox of Milwaukee. It's a novel set in Germany on the eve of World War II and also present-day Wisconsin. A great book. It explores themes of sacrifice, belonging, and family ties. And actually, there's still time to read with us. And then, but for sure, tune in this week on Thursday when we talk with Lauren Fox of Milwaukee. She'll be back on the show Thursday. The novel, Send For Me, on the Larry Mueller Show Book Club. And thanks a lot for listening today. Tomorrow we'll talk about pet microchipping on the show and how to shop for flea and tick products with Dr. Bill Stork. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.